All right, we're going to use our imaginations today. Is that all right? We're going to go back to the year 1879. Can you remember those days? Hey? Val, you can remember? But with my dad as well, like you can both remember what it was like in 1879, your teenage years. Just for those Northwood boys that are battling with mathematics, that's too long ago. They weren't alive in 1879. 1879. Humanity used to get on average 10 to 11 hours sleep a night. And then Thomas Edison invents the light bulb and is able to mass produce it. And so suddenly man has control of light. And it changes our sleeping habits for every year since. And in 1879, when the light bulb was developed, there was this incredible sense of accomplishment in humanity and their advancement and their ability to create things. And suddenly we find ourselves in 2024, suddenly, 100 and however many years later, we find ourselves in 2024 and we are exhausted. And we are mentally fatigued. And we wonder what happened. And we wonder why we no longer get the sleep that we used to be able to enjoy the privilege of when we were governed by the only light, which was the sun. And we realize that suddenly human advancement is maybe not advancement as we first thought it would be. Or more than that, maybe we're just not good at managing good advancements. And the human condition has deteriorated year after year as we can control light. We come into today, and I know that so many of us feel that even if we follow the invitation and the practice of God of one day of rest in seven, why does it not replenish us? Why are we not thriving? Why, when Jesus came to say, I've come that you may have life and have it to the full, do we not feel like we're having fullness of life? What is going on? What is disordered, even when we're doing our best to follow the ways of God? Friends, today I am in the second part of a three-week series, just of the unhurried life. Something that humanity has forgotten in its drive for production, in its drive to control every environment through technology, in its drive to be better, not truly understanding what better looks like or means. And today we want to talk around the Sabbath, this gift from God, this invitation from God to follow a way of life that leads us to fullness of life. But be warned, only the truly courageous will ever truly receive that invitation, even though it goes out to all of us. And as Christians, we are defined by the fact that we follow Jesus, that we have received him as our Savior, but also as our Lord, which means we follow him as our Master. And Jesus had a way of life. And so if we want to live in the freedom of life and the fullness of life that Jesus experienced, then surely we need to look at his life and some of the things that he ordered his life around in order for us to make those same gains in our own life. The Sabbath. This one day that is set aside by God as holy for us as humanity. Him, the Creator, knowing what is truly good for us, and us not so much knowing what is good for us. The Sabbath day, which many of us would incorrectly call a day off. But actually, it's a day to reorientate ourselves. And so we're going to look at it today. We're going to look at some of the things that Jesus modeled and taught us, and then what the invitation is. What should a Sabbath day truly look like if we want to keep walking into mental health, emotional health, and what it is to live life free and in the gift that God has for us? And so we're going to turn to Mark chapter 2, verses 23 to chapter 3, verses 6. And it's two stories about Jesus on the Sabbath, and how he engaged this day that God gave into the rhythms of our lives. Read with me, please. Mark chapter 2, verse 23. One Sabbath, Jesus was going through the grain fields, And as his disciples walked along, they began to pick some heads of grain. So what we see is Jesus on the Sabbath day is not isolating himself. He's with his mates. Important lesson. The Pharisee said to him, look, why are they doing what is unlawful on the Sabbath? Well, says who? The scriptures don't say it's unlawful. So had the Pharisees put some fences in place around what the day should look like, that were possibly unbiblical and not life-giving. He answered, have you never read what David did when he and his companions were hungry and in need? In the days of Abiathar the high priest, he went to the house of God and he ate the consecrated bread, which is lawful only for the priests to do. Then he said to them, the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. So the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath. The Sabbath is a gift for us as man. We read a second story in chapter 3, verses 1. Another time, Jesus went into the synagogue, and a man with a shriveled hand was there. And some of them were looking for a reason to accuse Jesus, so they watched him closely to see if he would heal him on the Sabbath. And so what we see is there's a Sabbath day. Jesus is at the synagogue where other people are. So there seems to be something about the Sabbath and the community of God's people being together. Just take note. Jesus said to the man with the shriveled hand, stand up in front of everyone. Then Jesus asked them, which is lawful on the Sabbath, to do good or to do evil, to save life or to kill? But they remained silent. And he looked around at them in anger and deeply distressed at their stubborn hearts. And he said to the man, stretch out your hand. He stretched it out and his hand was completely restored. So on the Sabbath, in community, Jesus heals. So there's something about healing on the Sabbath day. Then the Pharisees went out and began to plot with the Herodians how they might kill Jesus, because they had a set of rules for the Sabbath that Jesus seemed to be breaking. So as we follow Jesus as Christians, we want to learn a couple of things out of this and then go into some practicalities around how we can better receive the invitation of God for the Sabbath. Okay, are you with me? And so the few things that we see, the Pharisees accused Jesus of doing what is unlawful on the Sabbath, but that's not actually in the scriptures. We see that Jesus actually only had two commands for humanity: love the Lord your God with all your soul, strength, heart, and mind, and then love your neighbor as yourself. Those were the two commands. What the Pharisees had done to protect something valuable, the Sabbath day, they had put a whole book together, a document of policies, of rules and regulations. And by their estimation, Jesus was breaking one of them. What they had forgotten was that the fences protect what's valuable. The fences themselves aren't the value. We're going to get to that. Jesus says the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. It just helps us with our order of things. Jesus is in the synagogue on the Sabbath. Jesus is with the people. I'm so glad that you have chosen to come to worship God together with his family, created by the salvation of Jesus Christ. This is a good place for you to be. Jesus points to saving life on the Sabbath. So there's something about the Sabbath, the invitation of God and the action of God on the Sabbath day that is healing and restorative for us. Because the words are, he restored the man, he healed the man. It's quite interesting that in Greek, there is no difference. The same word is used for save and heal. And so as it's been interpreted in the scriptures that we read, sometimes we say Jesus saved a man, sometimes we say Jesus healed a man. Actually, the Greek word is exactly the same. And so we can interchange every time we read the scriptures. Jesus saved, healed a man. Jesus saved, healed a man. Healed, saved. And so where there is saving of us, there is healing. And where there is healing of us, there is saving. Just interesting for when we look at the Sabbath as a day of the healing of our soul, it is also the day of the saving of our soul. So we're going to look at a couple of things. Sabbath has two meanings to it. Well, it's the same meaning, but it's the continuation of a thought. But so often in churches, what has been taught is the first part of the thought, which is not the full thought. So Sabbath actually means this: stop. We've heard that? Stop. Sabbath is a day of stopping. But what we don't often teach is the continuation of that is stop so that you can enjoy the presence of God, that you can heal your soul in the presence of God. So the stopping is actually the entry point into the gift that God offers through the Sabbath, which is the healing of our soul in His presence. That is the goal of the Sabbath. The goal is not to stop. It's the entryway into it. And so we're going to look at four things that can help us practically with the Sabbath, because who wants to get better at receiving the gift that God has for us? He is the Creator. He does know better what is helpful for us to fully thrive as human beings. And when we like to control it, like light, we can get a bit bad and we stay up a little bit later than we should, and we get up a little earlier than we should because we can control light. And what ends up happening is we live in chronic exhaustion and fatigue. And we wonder why we're not living the fullness of life. You got me. Hope I've made that point clear. So the first thing, the Sabbath, is stopping. Stopping. Why is this important? I want to give you an example, something that happened to Jax and me last September, and hopefully it is helpful for you to understand why stopping is so important. Jax and I had the privilege of going over to the U.S. to Josh and Amber Cannizzaro, one of our church partnerships over in the U.S. in September. And one of the things that we had been invited to do was to enjoy a Harley ride on the open roads in New Orleans. And we were really looking forward to doing that. And so the week before, we were practicing on a motorcycle here. And Jax and I were on this motorcycle. And as we were rounding a corner, a car jumped the stop street. And so I had a choice to make. Either we hold our course and we run the risk of being smashed from the side, or I try to deviate and hopefully survive. And in that deviation, which was the decision I made, I lost control of the bike. It fell down on both of us, but it happened to clean break Jax's ankle. That was our hope for the US ride taken care of in one moment. This is what happens when we don't stop. We run the risk of fracturing our own souls, or worse, fracturing another's. God has woven into the rhythms of our lives that we would stop. Because in stopping, we get to pace ourselves in a way that is sustainable. We get to pace ourselves in such a way that we don't cause damage to others. When we run stop streets, we run the risk of injury to others or to ourselves. And God says, I invite you to the Sabbath, a way of life that will allow you to live more freely, allow you to live more fully. Will you embrace it, or will we keep going at a pace, jumping the stops that God puts in place every 7 days, and we end up fracturing our soul further and further and further until it's a clean break and we can no longer continue? Here's the reality of not stopping. We cannot enjoy being present with anybody unless we set aside that which we were doing. You can only enjoy something that you are present at. So I'm going to use a church example and then a non-church example. Maybe you've been around church for some time and you happen to miss that one church service that everybody raved about because God rocked up in a massive way and we saw unbelievable miracles take place. And you go, I wish I had been there. So you can't enjoy what you're not present at. Or we're in Durban. I don't know how many surfers are here, but I'm sure we can all appreciate the analogy. How many surfers are caught up in the workplace and you're just watching the group go, or the WhatsApp group go, and it's like, if you can get out of your workspace right now, the waves are cooking. It is beautiful. It is glassy. It is magnificent. You need to get out there, and you're stuck doing your work. And you cannot enjoy the gift that God has done in creation or given in creation. We can kind of relate to some of these examples. That's the issue with not stopping. We don't get to be present with God and His community in a way that we get to enjoy. And so stopping is fundamental to entering into the rest of the Sabbath. What does stopping actually entail? Well, it looks like setting some things aside. It means stopping work. And more than stopping work, it means stop worrying. The Sabbath is an invitation to the gospel. It's an invitation by God to say, will you trust me? Can you trust me? Do you trust me? Are you prepared to not only stop working, but also stop worrying? Can you for 24 hours set aside your worries? Pick them up in 24 hours' time, if you so wish. But hopefully in a day of delight and worship, it reorientates our minds and we get reestablished in the gospel. And actually the things of worry have taken on a lesser worry to us when we pick them up again 24 hours later. God has a habit of doing that in the reordering of our lives when we receive the gospel. And so here's the practice I want to encourage you with. Set a time to stop and develop a beginning and an ending ritual. A beginning and an ending ritual. Jax and I have found this really helpful. We haven't yet got an ending ritual, which is bad for us because it feels like we engage work a little bit too early. That time creeps. But we do have a beginning ritual, which we haven't really discussed. It's just become our thing. We know we've started our Sabbath day when we participate in our ritual. And it is so beautiful because over time, our minds have become trained. It's like, that's the moment. And it's like everything falls away. And we enter into the Sabbath day of rest. And so set a time to stop and develop a beginning and an ending ritual. The second thing of Sabbath is that it is an invitation of God into rest. But you can't rest until you stop. And so maybe by way of example, I occasionally enjoy an afternoon nap. Anyone else? Wow, that's only a very few people that enjoy an afternoon nap. All right. Well, I'll tell you what I do with an afternoon nap. I got to make sure my phone is off. I've got to make sure my curtains are closed. I've got to make sure that I have warned my kids by death, do not come down the passage. Do not knock on my door. Unless you are dying, do not knock on the door. The reality is, for me to enter into some rest, I set some fences in place. I set some boundaries. And this is what God invites us to. He says, I have rest for you, but you've got to stop doing some things and you've got to put some boundaries around what you're doing so that you can enjoy rest. And here's the reality. The Pharisees understood that. So they put a whole lot of laws in place to protect the Sabbath. The problem was they made the fences the sacred thing and not the Sabbath the sacred thing. Our responsibility is to have some fences, but that they don't become the all-important. And so as we do that, we enter into some rest. You see, fences protect what is valuable, and it works both ways. So we put up a fence around a swimming pool when you have young kids because your young kids are valuable and you don't want them going into what is dangerous. And so God puts up some fences at the invitation of the Sabbath to say, if you work 7 days a week, that's dangerous. I don't want you to go in there. So here's a fence to keep you out of that. And likewise, we put some fences around some things that are valuable, like a safe, for argument's sake. And we put our wallets and our passports, things that are valuable to us, in the safe because those are valuable. And so God does the same thing. Within this Sabbath day, within this 24 hours, let's put some fences to keep dangerous things out. And so it works both ways, fences to protect you from overdoing it and fences to make sure that you're able to enjoy all that is valuable about the Sabbath. And so we need to learn to put some fences up, but again, not to make the fences the big deal or the big story. You with me? And so as I started off this message, before the light bulb invention, research tells us that humanity slept 10 to 11 hours a night. Some of you that have been involved in church may know a story of John Wesley. So John Wesley and his brother started what is known as the Methodist movement. And he was renowned for waking up at 4:30 a.m. to pray. And what highly productive pastors have done have used John Wesley as the, I can burn the midnight oil, I can go longer, I can get up earlier, I can spend time in prayer. But they forget that the research actually shows that John Wesley, because it was early days, was going to bed at 6:30 in the evening. and having 10 hours of sleep. Because when the sun set, the sun set. And there was no artificial light. There was candle, we get that. But there was no artificial light to control his time. He was controlled by God's timing, which was sunrise and sunset. And so even men who have changed the face of the earth have done it on 10 hours of sleep a night. For all of you that think that you may lose out on some production time, may that just be a story of changing humanity when we do it to God's order, not our own. And so here's the practice. Make a list of what you will not do on the Sabbath and what you will do. And I've done it this way for a reason, because most of us need help in stopping before we can enter into rest. And so make a list of the things that you will not do. I will not wear a watch on the Sabbath. I sometimes get it right, sometimes not. So I don't want to, I'll judge myself by my intention, not my action. I like to have my phone off on the Sabbath. There are some things that I will not do. I will not engage my email. I do not engage my work email at all on a Sabbath. And so there are some fences that I put in place to help me not go there. Because research has shown that even the thought of work in your head, you don't have to be there, but the thought of work releases all the same chemicals in your body as though you were in that meeting. So even thinking about it is the same as being in it. So we have to put up fences that stop us thinking about it. And we are human, which means that none of us can just turn off our brains. It means we have to reorientate what we think about, which is where the next two come in. But the practice is make a list of what you will not do on the Sabbath and what you will do on the Sabbath. And this will do part comes into these next two points that is the invitation of God. So the third point is this: what will we do? Well, the Sabbath is a day of delight. It is not a day of arduous religious principle and practice. It's a day of delight. It's a day that God has said, be free from the work. You are no longer slaves. You get to enjoy this creation. You get to delight in the things that I have gifted to you. That is why I'm wearing my Sabbath delight shirt. And I know that most of you men are very jealous right now that I can pull off pink. Sabbath delight. What can we do that is creative and expressive and that reorientates our thinking to something that is just delightful? And much research has been done about this. Brené Brown, probably one of the leading voices on this subject in this generation, on the research of what it means to delight. Because as human beings, we've lost what it means to delight. The enemy has so got into culture and this drive for production, this drive for longer hours, this drive for distraction. Everything is just taking us further and further away from the fullness of life that God has for us, and we've forgotten what it is to be playful. And so Brené Brown talks about this. As adults, we don't know what it means to play. We kind of have believed this lie that as an adult, if you play, you are childish. Play is for kids. Well, that's not God's intention. God's intention is that we are his kids and that we would play. And so what does play mean? Well, it means this. Three things. It's time spent without purpose. Can you imagine taking 24 hours to do something that counts for nothing? Think about that. If you're an A-type personality like me, even the Sabbath is something to tick a box about. I've got to accomplish the Sabbath. So I've got to accomplish a rest in the afternoon. I've got to accomplish worship. I've got to accomplish stopping. I've got to accomplish. So I'm ticking boxes all the way through the Sabbath. Extremely unhelpful. Play is about time spent without purpose. Play is something that you don't want to end. When last were you in an environment or in a moment and you just thought, this is so good, I wish this moment never ended? Can you remember when last you were in one of those moments? That's the moment that needs to be replicated. on the Sabbath. When you just get lost in that and you don't want it to end. And then thirdly, it leads to a loss of self-consciousness. A loss of self-consciousness. It just doesn't matter. It's not about me. I'm not trying to produce anything. Some research shows a group of kids were asked to draw just for the pleasure of drawing, and all of them participated. And then they took the same group of kids and they said, all right, will you draw now? And we're going to give a certificate to you for your drawings. And the majority of them pulled out because suddenly drawing the same task had an attachment of an external reward, which meant inherently to them it was more onerous. It was work for them to draw. The same thing, drawing. Drawing for not a reward and drawing for a reward had two different outcomes. Both were drawing. And so we can still spend our Sabbath for an external reward for our own selves, and it diminishes all. We're working on the Sabbath to accomplish the Sabbath, if that makes sense. So what is the practice? The practice is this. Throw a Sabbath feast with our community and do something fun. Throw a feast. Jesus was with his mates in the grain fields. Jesus was in the synagogue, and we're going to get to that. Jesus was with people. I can't just switch my mind off, and so I have to reorientate my mind. So what I do for fun is actually I like to create. I work with wood, and I make some things that may be useful for the house and may not be useful for the house. I once spent, I don't know how many Sabbath days, creating a prayer bench for Jax, which I thought she would really like, only for me not to like it, and then we threw it away. And it's okay. It didn't bother me because I wasn't creating it for a specific, I didn't need a reward for it. It was just nice for me to be able to be creative and to work at something, and I get lost in time when I'm doing some wood, making some things out of wood, and suddenly it's evening time and it's time for dinner. I love those moments. What is that for you? That you can just get lost without purpose. This is God's invitation. So throw a Sabbath feast with our community and do something fun, which leads me into the last point, which is worship. And so the invitation of God is that we would stop so that we can enter into rest. And as we rest, we're able to delight, and our delight leads us to worship. That actually God's invitation from the very beginning of time was that the day would be holy. The Sabbath day would be holy. God worked for 6 days and then he rested and he enjoyed his creation. And then in Exodus chapter 20, verse 8, when he's instructing the Israelites on how to live, keep the Sabbath day holy. Don't keep it as your day off. Keep it holy. Keep the day set apart for me and for community that I am busy forming. That is the invitation of God. And so when we want to just keep it as a day off and do the things that we like to do, and yet we're not finding ourselves healed in our souls, we've got to ask the question, are we dictating what should happen on the day off, or is God dictating what should happen on the holy day, the Sabbath? And so Jesus finds himself in the synagogue, Sabbath after Sabbath after Sabbath. And he finds himself with people worshiping God. Early Christians called it the Lord's Day because it was the day of Jesus' resurrection, the day that we were formed as a community. And so actually part of the Sabbath day is a resetting of ourselves in the gospel, that every Sunday we get to come and stand and go, God, thank you for your goodness. I am a new creation in Christ, and I have brothers and sisters in Christ because of your reconciliatory work. This is the position from which I live my life. The gospel played out Sunday after Sunday after Sunday in community. And this is what we find as pastors. We find that we're increasingly hearing people say, I need a break from church. And I've been wrestling it this week. We had a real ding-dong as a preaching team on Wednesday, wrestling through this point. And I've just come to land it in this, that too many people kind of throw a Hail Mary pass that everything must be done on the Sabbath. I work so much, too much. Everything is out of order. Monday to Saturday for 6 days of the week. And then on the Sunday, I'm loading all, I need my solitude time. I need everything. And so they're looking to the Sabbath to give them solitude when actually God didn't intend for the Sabbath to be solitude. God intended Sabbath to be community. Solitude was intended the other 6 days, have some time. Jesus, early in the morning, went away to be with himself. Jesus went away to be with himself. Jesus went away to be with himself and with his Father. But on the Sabbath, he went to the synagogue. So we've got it wrong, friends, many of us. And so we're looking to the Sabbath to give us something that the other 6 days are supposed to give us. And then we're starving ourselves of the very thing that God intended for us to have on the Sabbath. Community. And we get tired. Nobody feels like being with people when we're exhausted. And so when we arrive at Saturday night or Sunday morning, and because of the way we've spent Saturday night, we're exhausted. We starve ourselves of the very community that God has put into the fabric of human creation, that we would be encouraged and inspired. And the healing of our souls, the saving of our souls, is the invitation and the gift that God has on offer when we're in community on the Sabbath day. And so either if church is a chore or it's hard work or you don't feel like you can come week in and week out, we're either doing church wrong or we have disordered lives Monday to Saturday, which causes us to not be in great shape. We've just thrown a Hail Mary pass that we've got to have everything on a Sunday, and sometimes we don't get to everything. And so this unhurried life is about how we pace ourselves so that it's the holistic view. It's not just Sabbath as a standalone. It's all the practices. It's all the ordering of our lives. 6 days a week and then the seventh. 6 days a week and then the seventh. You following me? And so what does this mean for us? What's the practice? Can you identify at least one, but preferably a few, ways that you deeply enjoy God with your personality and your stage of life? And learn to spend the day in worship. Everybody's in a different stage of life here. God is not, again, he's not following the Pharisaical laws, which says it has to look like this for everybody. What he's inviting us into is stopping and resting and delighting and worshiping. For some people, the thought of doing some woodwork is positively awful. Please don't do that. Do what is helpful that you can delight in and worship. And worship is not limited to the 70 or 75 minutes that we're together as a community. Worship is the 24-hour experience of us being in the presence of God, because that's where he heals and he saves our soul. As we continually reset ourselves around the gospel of his grace. And so I close out with this point, with 2 points. One is that in the scriptures, a day actually starts with sunset, not sunrise. And so the Hebrew practice, the Jewish practice, is that a sunset is the start of the day. Why is that crucial to us? Why is that important? Well, it's important because of this. It means that we start our day most often around a family meal, community, and into sleeping. What does that mean? It means this, that God's about his business of stewarding creation. And when we awake, we ask him, how can we part? What have you been up to for the last 8 hours, God, or 10 hours? Can I join you in what you're doing? What Western thinking has done, which is what we all pretty much buy into, is we wake up in the morning, that's the start of the day, and we say, this is what we're going to get on with. We get to nighttime. Most often we battle to switch off because we wonder if God's going to be able to finish the work that we haven't yet finished. And so we have it the wrong way around. That's why in Genesis, if we read the creation account, this is how it reads. It reads, there was evening and then morning, the first day. There was evening and then morning, the second day. There was evening and then morning, the third day. God deems the start of our day to be at sunset around a family meal and then into sleep, the grace of the gospel that God is at work while we are doing nothing. Then we get up to partner with him in the stewarding of creation for the next 12 hours as we join him in what he's doing amongst us. This incredible gift that God offers to us, friends. And so choose these practices. And as I close off, the Sabbath day cannot be a Hail Mary or the Holy Grail. And what I mean by that is I've explained the Hail Mary. It can't be, I am so exhausted, I am so everything, and I will live a chaotic, disordered life for 6 days, but I'm throwing everything at the Sabbath day, and in that 24 hours, I'm trusting that God can rework a miracle every single Sunday to reorder our lives. That's not God's pattern. He can do that, but that's not his pattern. And so we can't live with that being the Hail Mary pass for our thriving. And likewise, it can't be the Holy Grail. It can't be this thing of so many fences and protection that the Sabbath is valuable and you don't have access to it. And you don't have access to it and nothing. Because if one thing comes and throws itself in that is a little bit out of the ordinary, suddenly we feel like, oh, my Sabbath has gone up in smoke. When one of our children fall ill, no, you can't be ill today. It's my Sabbath day. I can't be looking after you. Somebody in the community is under pressure. Sorry, can't be doing that because it's my day off. And so it can't be the Holy Grail as the Pharisees made it. But it is an invitation from God as a way of life. And every seventh day, we get to experience this. And as we experience these seventh days, it starts to build up in our system and we start to receive the benefit and we start to walk in the fullness of life as Jesus intended for us to do. Would you stand with me this morning?